You want to be a pro, but at the same time, you have to couple that with what comes out of you and just not really let what David Bowie used to say, playing to the gallery. I love how he used to say that. You know, you never want to play to the gallery. It's a dangerous place for an artist to be.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, creatives, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. We will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Jewel Schroeder. Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, tuning in today from Boulder, Colorado. Today's guest is joining me from Nashville, Tennessee. I have got Daniel Matthew York in the house. Daniel, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
I absolutely am, and thank you for having me.
Yes, super excited to have this man on the show. He has many, many passions, from being an entrepreneur, an artist, a traveler, so many different things, a little bit of a dark satire humorist, potentially, if you know some of his work. Yeah. And for those of you not familiar with Daniel, he is a serial entrepreneur and American painter based out of Nashville. He's a CEO and founder of a multiple seven-figure agency and really pursues so many different passions, embodying the unconventional life as a professional. I know your art has been influenced by hundreds of years of art, where your current work is called Delusionism, which you explain, I just want to snap you out of your day for a minute. Maybe I'll give you a laugh and maybe you'll write me a check. Mm-hmm. And I think that really
I do also enjoy eating, just so you know, like everybody else, yeah.
Yeah. And Unconventional Life, we got a really great art giveaway actually heading up at the end of the episode. So make sure to stay tuned for that. And, you know, I know beyond that, you've really taken all the elements of being an artist as an entrepreneur and bringing these worlds together in a really unique way. So super excited to have you on the show, Daniel. Fill in any gaps that I might've left out and give us a glimpse into your personal
life. That was great. That was really great. I mean, that pretty much embodies what I do and where I do it.
Yeah. I love it. So, you know, I think for a long time, and I think it's been shifting now, we had to like choose this box. Even before Unconventional Labors, we started this interview, you know, he was like, oh, you're also a bit of a Renaissance woman. It's like, Yep, I do a lot of different things. And for me, that's become such a philosophy of life. And how do you approach your passions with your brand, with also just the pursuit of excellence in your own way and in your own style?
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, we did just kind of briefly touch on that before we started. But, you know, it really comes down to it. I don't like having weak spots, you know, and I feel that when you have a weak spot, that this universe comes in and just gets in there and manifests right there in that weak spot. So I've always tried to not have a weak spot, which is cool with the whole entrepreneurial thing, you know. As an entrepreneur, I mean, you know, being an entrepreneur is not an easy life. It's hard. You ruin relationships. I mean, you're up and down financially, and it's a tough life. But it also forces you to learn everything. You have to learn about PR. You have to learn about marketing. You have to be able to sell. You have to be able to learn about finance and accounting and servicing people and how to, you know, I mean, you have to learn everything. And, and I really love that approach, to life in general. And it goes into art, and you'll usually find that when you get into the art world, it's no different than the entrepreneurial world. As a matter of fact, it's the exact same. There's different benefits to it, which are super cool, but you know, you really take what you learn in that business world and put it in there. I mean, Andy Warhol, you know, one of his famous quotes was, you know, the best form of art there is business. And I know what he's talking about. So I usually, when you're working with other artists and stuff, I mean, there's amazing artists out there. And then, you know, I used to be like you as a musician when I was younger. I used to play in a band that was produced by Marilyn Manson and Slipknot's producers. And in my early 20s, yeah, that's the world I came out of. And
so I love it.
Yeah, but our producer used to joke, his name was Sean, what was his name? He was a Grammy award-winning producer, Sean something or another, come up with his name. He was from Madison, Wisconsin. But he would tell us, we were a bunch of children, and he would tell us, he's like, yeah, the best musicians you're ever going to meet are living in the trailer park, you know? And we're like, oh, you know, and you kind of listen to that because when you're an artist, you're trying to be the best. And then at some point you realize it's not really about being the best anymore. It's about communication and all these things start to come together, you know, and as you know, in a music world, what's a question somebody asks you all the time? So what kind of music do you do? That's the question. Like, what kind of art do you do? What, oh, do you do abstract? Do you do this? They're instantly trying to pigeonhole you into something. And then artists typically will bounce back of any sort. And I mean, actors too, right?
Yeah.
There's niched out actors. They'll come out and say something like, well, you know, I don't want to be categorized. You know, I'm very original, you know, they want to do that, but that's just not how the world thinks. And that's why I really like the philosophy of, like, you know, what we're talking about, you know, trying to be a Renaissance person of any sort. It fills in those weak spots so that you can learn to maneuver. Why do people ask those questions? Well, it's how people think. It's public relations. I mean, that's a technology you have to know to be successful. You have to learn marketing. And if you don't understand those things, you're going to be in deep, you know what, you know, I don't know what your audience is like, so I'll edit my Chicago. I'm born and bred Chicago, so I'm going to edit a couple of things.
Yeah. I love it. Well, yeah. You know, in so many ways to what you're speaking to, it's really having your own style and being able to embrace all of it. And I found when I stepped into my life and I stopped compartmentalizing my self-expression, but bringing all pieces of my self-expression into everything I was doing, that's when I really found my sweet spot. And I know your art, particularly the work that you're doing right now, Delusionism, is a bit polarizing. It definitely is its own style. And we were talking about that. You're like, people either love it and they geek out on it, like they're diehard fans, or they're like, what the heck is this? And so how have you leaned into finding your own style? And for those that are listening, whether it's in their art or in their life, to really be able to embrace, you know, themselves and their uniqueness.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, how old were you when you started doing music?
I started when I was about 15, 16. I was on American Idol for a little bit, realized I didn't like that format, and then kind of had my 15 minutes of fame in junior high.
We really do have the Renaissance gal here. I should be interviewing you. From now on, guys, this is now flipped around. So everybody, let's get ready for that. You know, for me, I mean, you know, I started doing art when I was like 7 years old. I discovered I was good at it. And I just had this kind of quirky style that was just what I did. There was no real explanation for what I did or what I enjoyed. It was just what I did. And then as you get older, especially when you get into your teen years, you're kind of introverted and you're trying to make friends and you're trying to be popular and you go through that whole thing and be accepted. You know what I mean? And everybody says they don't do that, but let's get real. Everybody, we all do that unless you're hyper popular or something like that. I don't know, but everybody's trying to be accepted and find their own way and find their group and find their tribe. And so you go from being you to being sort of this conglomeration of opinions, right? And then for me, through my 20s, I really burned off a lot of that. And it was really helpful because then I realized, I was like, shit, I had this from the get-go. I knew what I was doing from the get-go. And I really wasted a lot of time in my life trying to make others happy. And it's not that you don't want to make others happy, but when it comes to what you're creating, the opinions are in there. It's kind of like, you know, here's you, and then you just stick a bunch of pieces of bubble gum all over you. Well, after a while, you're not you anymore. And what you're creating is just, it shows it. So, but I would separate that out from professionalism, very much so. So when you get into technique, you know, as a singer, you know that there's techniques and there's practice and there's professionalism and, you know, that's different. You want to practice. You want to be a total pro at your craft. And whether that's an abstract artist who knows how to play color in depth versus a guitarist who knows how to play on time with the drummer and be tight. You want to be a pro, but at the same time, you have to couple that with what comes out of you and just not really let what David Bowie used to say, playing to the gallery. I love how he used to say that. You know, you never want to play to the gallery. It's a dangerous place for an artist to be. And I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know as a trendsetter, you've definitely, especially with your recent collection of work, it's what has given you the audience and the community and the support. And, you know, if we were a fly on the wall looking back at some of these snapshots, you know, as you just highlighted a little bit, was this the trajectory or were your parents supportive? Were they like, I'm going to go, you know, have a full-time career as an artist? And they're like, good luck. That's at least how my dad was. He was a Wall Street guy. And he was like, only the 1% make it and blah, blah, blah. And don't do it. And it's out of love. However, you know, it was limiting in a lot of ways. And I had to kind of work with that. And so what would we have seen in some of these moments? And, you know, where would we have also seen business intersect within those moments when it came to money and how you viewed career?
Well, I mean, life is tough for everybody. I mean, everybody's got their challenges. I grew up with wonderful parents, great parents, but we didn't have any money. You know, I grew up poor and, you know, everything we did, me and my brothers and sisters did on our own, bought our first cars, had jobs from the ages of really 12 years old and up and all that. It was, for me, there wasn't some big secret. It was just intersecting life and taking it as it came. And I had kids really young. I was 13. That's a joke. I wasn't that young.
I was like, wait, I was digesting that for a second.
13. Oh yeah. No, that's kidding. I wasn't that cool when I was a teenager, believe me. So, but no, I was about 20 when my daughter was born, and, you know, and so I look at pictures of myself. I'm like, God, what was I doing? You know? So you're finding your way and you got to go out and make money. And what's funny is people would look at that as failure to some degree. Like, well, you weren't doing art, making money in your music. And you were, you know, you went from working with these Grammy award-winning producers to going and selling cars and stuff like that. But the funny thing was, is that was like the best thing for me. Those were the stepping stones that landed me where I am today. And I'm glad about that. It's like, you hear people that are successful always talking about there's no such thing as mistakes. And I really firmly believe that, you know, whether your path went exactly as you decided is almost irrelevant to me. You know, yeah. You've got billions of people on the planet, billions of decisions being made. You're intersecting with all of them and you think that things are going to go according to your plan. That's a crock of shit. It's never going to go according to your plan, you know? And that's what makes successful people. Most of the successful people I've met, they all say the same things, you know, they're hyper routine. And this is in any industry, in any arts, they're hyper routine. They're super persistent. You know, they're very tight mentally. Rarely have I met somebody who is like the Jim Morrison or the Kurt Cobain, who, believe me, I love these guys as artists, you know, but they were, you know, shooting heroin. And so I just don't meet many people like that in my life that are very successful. And if they are, it's usually because they have handlers of some sort or somebody managing them. And they're just kind of the cash cow that everybody manages or something like that. You know, anybody that's done it on their own, I find that they're pretty focused. So, but you know, even having kids, you know, some people would be like, oh my God, I can't believe you have kids so young. But I'll tell you what, you want to put your head on straight and focus. Holy cow, having kids will do that a lot. And so and the cool thing about having kids young too is that they don't know that you don't have any money when they're young. So you can get that out of the way, because when they're older, they know, you know, they know.
Such good perspective with that. And, you know, I think even just having to manage, like you said, the mental game and cultivate the mental game. And was that something that, you know, came naturally to you, or what has some of that cultivation looked like? And is there some, either A, your own routine, but just some tools that you were like, yeah, these were pivotal moments. These things were game changers. And any of those that are relevant to share with the listeners for their own practices.
Yeah, I've got a couple. I mean, I couldn't agree more on that. On the mental aspect of it is senior to anything physical for me. It's always in my head first, and then it comes out in life. And if I can get it in my head successfully, which we all know is easier said than done. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to say to yourself, I'm going to be worth $100 million. Well, the first person you're going to have to fight on that is you. And we all know it. You're going to sit there and throw your own bullshit at you and your own doubts and your own disbelief. And like, well, how am I realistically going to get there? You have this whole argument with yourself. You know what I mean? And if you're doing that, it's hard to really get it to manifest in the world. So the first game is always with me. But I've learned tricks for sure that I use in creating my art and in life. And, you know, a good friend of mine says that I always sound like TV commercial slogans. And I actually do, because I actually use TV commercial slogans, but they're true. Like, one of them is the AutoZone slogan, get in the zone. Right. But I'm telling you, that's what I do, is I just, you know, athletes do this, and I'm not an athlete. I'm not like a sports guy. I'd rather go see a concert than a sports game, but, like, athletes really have a benefit of doing what they do, because they know they have to get in the zone, and they don't have a choice to wake up and not work out that day. I mean, that's their career. As an artist, I do have a choice to not work out in the morning. And there's many times where I choose not to, which is many, many, many days in a row right now, probably. Could be hundreds, just so you know. But, you know, you do have to get into the zone. So some people look for that inspiration. Some people look for music. And I just get there. I just go, you know what? Right now. Right. And you're just there.
Decision. Yeah,
exactly. And you're there. And then it just starts happening. Everything follows that. So there's not, it's almost like changing your perspective from being reactive to the environment and letting the environment control you, or you controlling the environment. And it just starts with you. So get in the zone is one. Just do it is another one that is so corny, but I'm telling you, it is just the way it is. Some people have an amazing idea, or, you know, they'll want to do something in the arts or something like that. And they'll, you know, what they do is they think themselves out of it. And they not only think themselves out of it, they'll go like, they'll go to their friends and their family and they say, hey, what do you think about this? Hey, what do you think about this? And they'll be like, and now they're not only thinking with their thoughts, they're thinking with 20 other people's thoughts. And so now they don't even have their own thoughts. And then they don't do shit. They're just done. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people will talk to me and ask me that similar question. I'll be like, I don't like to talk to much of anybody about my ambitions. I usually keep my ambitions very quiet until they start to realize, because I don't want the opinions, because most people's opinions, unless they're your real inside crew who are as ambitious and, you know, can really get the idea into the mind, your mind. That's, you know, the reality is a lot of people aren't supportive of, they want to be realists. Well, shouldn't you just do this and do the safe route? It's like, well, you know, listen, we grew up with parents and grandparents that all did the safe route. And, you know, how many times do you talk to somebody who's dying and they say this to you? I wish I would have done this. Do you want to do that? You know, I don't want to die like that.
I don't want to die like that either. I imagine many of you unconventional lifers listening to this probably feel the same way.
Yeah.
Which is right. Why you're tuning into this show. And, you know, in terms of crafting and really owning that decision and your own ambition, I know you've made some choices, especially with this new work that you've done with Illusionism. And I want you to share a little bit about what this body of work is and how you've taken this conversation in your own way into that art, and what might some of our listeners not know about you and your process with art, or particularly with this collection.
Yeah, particularly with this collection, is, you know, as any artist, you're moving through things. And just as you would as a singer, you're moving through different styles. And maybe you touch into country music, maybe you touch into pop, but eventually you sort of find your thing and you're like, you know, this, it just really resonates. And for me, I went through that same process. And I love to laugh, I love to prank, I love to joke around. I'm not some heroin shooting alcoholic who has, you know, all of these issues that somebody's like Oliver Stone's going to make a movie about because it's so depressing. You know, I'm not that guy. And I really appreciate people that can pull you out of the mundane every day, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like in my gallery, which I don't have a gallery downtown in Nashville anymore, we closed that with COVID, but I had a gallery where my stuff would be shown locally in Nashville. And what was funny is we'd have these, you know, you'd have these local art crawls. So you'd have a bunch of galleries. It's in the art. We have an arts district, right? Yeah. And hundreds of people would come through in a night, and people would come into my gallery and like giggle and point and be like, what am I looking at? But the point was, as you could see, they were no longer in their head at all, like almost instantaneously. And then they would laugh. My favorite reaction is laughter. You know, most artists would be like, well, I'm so interesting, I wouldn't want anybody to laugh at my stuff. I'm like, but no, I love when people laugh at my stuff, because it's my form of comedy. And, you know, but I really love the effect of having somebody look at it and being drawn out. And believe me, you put something like this in your house, okay? You would never buy a piece of my art and say, I hope it matches my rug. Like, you're looking at the wrong artist for that. But if you put this in your home, believe me, everybody that comes into your home goes, what the F is that? And everybody's talking about it, because that's the kind of art it is. And that's the product of it, right? Is I want you out of your head. I don't want you sitting there, you know, thinking about all the trials and tribulations of the day. And so that's really the genesis of the whole delusionism thing. It's like, what's the delusionism? Life is the goddamn delusion. It's all fake. You know, it's all of us. You know, I don't know how old you are, but I know how old I am. And I'm not a millennial. I'm on this. I think I'm Gen X. I'm just older than a millennial. So I'm like a Gen X. I don't know which one I am, but you know, listen, when I get together with my high school buddies, it's like, we're 16 years old again. And all this adult stuff is bullshit. We're all just like faking each other out. Like, look, I'm wearing a button-down shirt instead of a Megadeth t-shirt now. Isn't that cool? And now I drive a nicer car. Look how fake I am. And then I talk so much more eloquently. It's all garbage and we all know it. And that's the delusionism. And that's the whole point of the art series, is to pull you guys out of that and just be like, look, this is who we really are. You guys don't want to act stiff and adult? Great, go ahead. But we all know the truth.
Yeah. Well, and I know, like, talking about that childlike wonder, your daughter actually was the one who helped you with that. And I'd love for you to share like her perspective and how that, you know, maybe influenced some of this as well.
Yeah. She's you can look her up on Instagram, and she goes by Natter Batter, and she's an author and she's super talented. And she's, It's funny. So we're so different. She's a very cerebral author type. I guess all author types are. I mean, this chick was writing books at 10 and 11 years old. And so one day we were doing a little road trip to see some family. And I was like, you know, and I was just thinking of the PR and marketing of what I do. I can't throw it out and be like, look how original it is, everybody. Because people will be like, great. You know, I mean, you have to find an audience. That's your job as the artist. You have to find the audience. Nobody's going to tell you what your audience is. And she and I sat around and we were like playing with words, you know, like what could we do that is like our cubism or our Dada or our, you know, our any genre of art that has come through, which would really be mine, which we wanted to have some sort of comedic, you know, thing. And I just want to break everybody out of the bullshit. That's really what it is. So that was like, well, and then delusion, the word delusion just stuck there.
Yeah.
And so, and then we were like looking around and delusionism was not really in use. So we're like, that's a pretty good word. So we just started it from there. And so,
yeah, I love it.
I don't think we can copyright a word, but you know, so we won't make any money on it. But we roll with it.
Yeah. Well, we'll put the link to your daughter's Instagram up on our website, our show notes at unconventionallifeshow.com. So you can check her out as well, along with Daniel Matthew York's Instagram too. And I know, you know, one of the other ways you built and really, like you said, no one's going to give you your audience. You go create your audience. If you've used a lot of NFT, crypto, even the metaverse, you've done alternate tools to help you in the creation of that. And so I'd love for you to share, you know, how are you utilizing those tools and what has you interested those in terms of building the audience with them?
Well, that's an interesting question because I would reverse that. What a lot of people do, they're very reactionary and they go like, oh, you know, this is the new thing. This is the new thing. Well, then they spend 20 years going through the new thing and none of them worked because they weren't adapting what they do to that. You know what I mean? It's kind of like if you're a plumber, okay, just to take it completely out of the world that we're talking about. And you say, okay, well, I'm a plumber and I'm going to go advertise my plumbing company on Instagram. Okay. So you could advertise your plumbing company on Instagram, but when your faucet leaks or your toilet doesn't flush, what do?
Go to Google.
You go to Google. Exactly. So you better go do something on Google. See what I mean? You get very logical about the pathways. And that's how you have to utilize technology and NFT. And I'm not a digital artist. I'm a painter. I like my hands dirty. I like art. I like seeing it. I like the texture. I like having it hung up. And there's a life that you can see in a painting that any good artist puts into it that you only see in person. You won't see it in an image. You'll see the life in it. And that's me. So I'm not an NFT guy. However, I'm like, okay, well, these NFTs and crypto, I'm a big crypto guy myself, and crypto is already niched out in so many areas and it's just exploding. So you start to look at the opportunities for what you do. See what I mean? So it's a different thing. I align what I do with what's coming in, then I can start to see where the opportunities come. And just like we talked about earlier, knowing PR and marketing, I mean, there's great PR and branding books that I could recommend to you guys that have helped me dramatically.
You want to share a few of your top ones real quick with listeners?
Oh yeah, probably my top one is the it's an Al Rees book, and I want to say it was from the 70s, and it's so relevant to today. But it was called The 22 Immutable Laws of Branding, and immutable meaning unchanging. And I'll tell you, that book, that guy really knew what he's talking about. I don't know if he's still alive anymore, but that book. I feel has been referenced and referenced and referenced. And I read a ton of good PR and marketing books and helps you understand people. That's what's so great about it. You understand the psyche of people. And when I was in, my band was called the Cinderkin. And we were like, you know, 90s rock, right? Mm-hmm. So you might go to somebody who's a pop star or a pop fan and they listen to it and you're like all excited. Like, yeah, what do you think? And they go, that's cool. And then you're let down. Well, the responsibility of that was yours, not theirs. You know what I mean? What, everybody's going to like your stuff? That's your naivety. You're being naive. Your responsibility is, you know, knowing, first of all, not everybody's going to like your stuff. So forget about it. Do your own thing. And then you go, okay, so who likes my stuff or who likes similar stuff, right? And then you go follow after that. Like there's big artists in the world who, weirdly, we have similar styles, and it's not that we kind of have that thing. So I'm like, okay, well, I start to gravitate towards their audiences, you know what I mean? And just take full responsibility for the fact that probably not even my kids like what I do as terms of art. And I'd love my kids to love what I do, but hey,
Yeah.
That's life. That's life as an artist. You polarize. And if you're trying to make everybody happy and trying to get everybody to like it, you will 100% make the worst shit you've ever made in your entire life. I mean, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well said. And I've noticed that through music. I'm sure listeners, you know, in your own path, even with business, and it's great advice, looking at who's doing what I'm doing, who has a similar style, creating from that place, and from that place, iterating again and again. It's like where you put your attention. It's like going back to your thing, you know, it was like, just do, and I forget your other one. What was your first slogan?
It was get in the zone. Yeah.
Get in the zone.
Those are copyrighted. We can't use these guys.
But you decide and you get in the zone and you're like, this is where I'm going to put my attention on, rather than the million of people who don't, you know, resonate with it. I'm going to go for those, you know, that do. And my last question for you, you know, before we start to transition into our rapid fire round, you know, really is the future of money and also just the economic side of being an artist. And what are you noticing right now that is, you know, allowing you to have this, you know, 7-figure brand in what you're doing, and how are you able to do that? Like, what are some of the revenue streams or the strategies that some of our listeners might be able to take advantage of in their own?
Well, it's another great question, especially with the art community. The art community in a large part tends to like to play irresponsible for, you know, and like hope that somebody else is going to do it for them. And I always say, like, get real, you know, learn about money, learn about economics. It's not hard. Learn one word at a time, one stinking word at a time. I have a dictionary app right on the front of my iPhone that I use every day. And you learn one word at a time, one word a day, you got 365 words a year, and you'll really start to pick up the subject. But money is so rapidly changing right now. And when you learn it, you'll find that you could get in real trouble if you don't pay attention. And the people who aren't paying attention are going to get in trouble. Right now, they're telling you, for example, there's like 6% inflation. What a crock of shit that is. I mean, my grocery bill alone, just my grocery bill, not even talking about my gas bill, has doubled in the last 6 months. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's at Whole Foods, of course, too, because I'm getting I like my my ribeye steaks, but those steaks that I like every week have doubled in price.
Yeah,
now, that's more than 7% inflation and in 6 months. And my gas bill has almost doubled, not quite, but almost, probably 40% more than I was paying 6 months ago. So, you know, you think about that and then you go, okay, well, I'm going to price this art piece at $10,000. Well, that $10,000 is no longer $10,000. You understand it's $7,000. And then you got to realize the people who are buying art probably aren't using money anymore, or they don't want to. See what I mean? Because people who are financially adept and have money, they're smarter than the people who don't, because they have to be. Otherwise, the IRS takes it. So they're studied. And I'll tell you, a lot of the people in that ball game that I know, they are taking their cash levels and dropping it down to like this. They're keeping minimum amounts of cash. They're moving it into hard assets such as gold, silver, property, cryptocurrencies like a mother, Bitcoin especially, because Bitcoin is now the new digital store of wealth. And as an artist of any sort, you could either look at that as a liability of like, oh, technology's screwing us again, or you could look at that as a pure opportunity. And that's all I see it as. I see it as an opportunity, just like the internet for artists, where for example, for you as a musician, what do you even need a label for anymore? You can directly PR. You don't. You can do your own thing, start your own corporation, go straight to the public, find your audience, hit them on YouTube, hit them on Instagram, hit them on TikTok, sell them directly. And now we've got ways for you guys to NFT your music. I mean, how much cooler does it get than that? If I was a record label, I would be literally crapping my diaper, you know? I would really be freaked out, because we could take away all the power from them, you know? And then the only reason you would ever want like a major label is the PR of it, and the fact that they'll get you on MTV and all that other stuff. But, you know, I'll make the argument that, would you rather make $20 million a year and net $1 million? Okay. Or would you rather make $1.5 million gross and net $1 million? It's all the same to you. See what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So
that's where I think that if we all just get smart with this and learn a word a day and learn about finances, more and more opportunities will show up for you. For example, like when I sell an art piece, you know, I'd rather have somebody pay me in cryptocurrency, and I almost don't care what crypto it is, because I know how to transfer it right away into Bitcoin or Ethereum or any of these other cryptos. I just had a piece sell for a bunch of Cardano. So guys, like, you take Cardano? I was like, of course I take Cardano. So he transfers me Cardano. I flipped it to Bitcoin in 5 minutes, paid my little fee, and it was done.
Yep.
You know,
totally.
And I would rather have it in Bitcoin, because you know, people are like, Bitcoin is so volatile. And I'm like, okay, well, the purchasing power of my dollar in the last 2 years has gone down by what, 35%?
Yeah.
What's the volatility here? So, you know, money and business and economics is, and it's just its own art. And it's funny, it's actually fascinating and it's fun. And for artists, if they start learning about that stuff, it just, the stars in your eyes should start to show up, because you'll really see opportunities. And we live in an amazing age to take advantage of things.
Yeah, we do. There's a whole nother podcast we could probably do on this subject. Oh,
yeah. Totally. Big time. Yeah, that's 2 hours right there. Easy. Yeah.
And so upcoming attractions. I love that. Daniel, Matthew, Eric, everyone. We've got a great giveaway coming up just after this rapid fire round. If you've been enjoying this conversation and if you're a fan of Daniel. So series of lightning questions coming at you. This was not on your prep sheet. Are you ready?
Oh, we're doing it now. I'm ready. Let me take a sip of my coffee.
Unconventional Lifers, thank you so much for being a fan of the show. If you are loving this episode, please share this conversation with a friend or someone you feel it may inspire. We would so love if you leave us a review on iTunes so this message can reach even more people. As we are about to jump back into the rapid fire round, enjoy the music that has been playing in the background off my newest album that I just released called Vancouver. 10 songs inspired by love, death, transformation, and freedom. You can listen more at JulesSchroederMusic.com and in the outro at the end of the episode.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. Question number one, fill in the blank. Speaking about yourself, if you really knew me, you would know what?
That I've seen Rick and Morty 5 times through and we'll probably keep doing that because I don't really like watch much other TV.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Next question. What is one word that you've learned recently that you really enjoy and why?
I can't say it live. Okay. But it's not one that I've learned recently. It's just a word that I use all the time because it has so many uses and it's so, and it can be used in every which way from Sunday. And my mom hates it. I'm sorry, mom, but it's the F word. It's funny. You can throw it around and coming from where I come in Chicago, you'll say like, you'll say a sentence and then the sentence will pause and you'll throw the word right into the middle of the sentence and then finish the sentence. You know, you Chicago people know what I'm talking about. So it doesn't really answer your question, but that's the best I got for you in a rapid fire.
I love it. All right. Yeah. Next question. If you could turn back time to the 16-year-old, you look him in the eye, sit him down, give him a piece of advice that you know now, what would you say to him?
Stop doing drugs, because I was doing a lot of drugs back then. And so I would say knock that shit off and fast, because it really it ruined me in a lot of ways. It took me a long time to get back. And in two areas, really. One was focus and the other was drive and ambition, you know, because a lot of those drugs, they take away your ambition. And as an artist, it sucks because you think you need it to create and to come up with all this cool stuff. And then when I considered quitting drugs forever when I was 19, which I did, I was scared that I was never going to get into that hyper creative mindset. And it was like that for a while. So it kind of scared me as an artist. And I was like, God, I can't quit this stuff. So I would have just said, knock it off, get through it like anything else. And I probably would have been much more successful as a musician than I was. Cause like I said, we had the radio, we had the contacts, we had the music. I was playing with ultra talented guys who, I really miss playing with, and we just had it, and it was really, it came down to us. So slap the little kid around, get off the drugs, buddy.
Yeah. What did you play, by the way? Were you guitar, bass?
Yeah, I was the bass player in the band, and you know, me and the singer wrote a lot of the songs. His name was Mike Murphy, and total genius. Yeah, he's super genius, that guy.
Yeah, love it. Last question: when you think about the unconventional life, what does living the unconventional life mean to you?
Yeah, it's funny because I was thinking about that. Unconventional life is it's funny to me, that would really be listening to yourself and avoiding the morass and the agreement of the modern world and all the you should do's of this and the maze of you need to do this and you have to do this is right. And it's hard. You know, anybody who tells you it's not hard is just lying straight to your face or giving you some pie in the sky concept. That's just not true. Success is hard. And then when you're successful, it's even harder. That's another thing nobody tells you. Being successful is harder because now you've got a lot to lose and you got to keep it. And now you're supporting all these people. You have staff and you know what I mean? It's harder than
it is. Not. More money, more problems.
More money, more problems. Nobody will tell you that. You know, one thing people are like, oh, I would love, you know, people be like, I would love to make $1 million a year, and be like, okay, well, you know what the tax rate is on $1 million of net income per year? They're like, oh, I don't want to pay that. I'm like, see, that's the point. You want that, you got to raise that, right?
Yep, so, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Daniel, tell us about the giveaway that you've got for one of our listeners.
Yeah, so I'm basically going to give away one of my Delusionism series. It's a recent piece that I just finished. It's I think the measurements on it are 16 by 16. It's an oil piece. It's for some of you maybe highly offensive, for others maybe hilarious and a great addition to your home. So if you want to be in the contest and get something that's as polarizing as she said, then join up.
Yeah, so, so good. And so, so generous. Unconventional Lifers, you can head over to the website, unconventionallifeshow.com. Click on the giveaway tab. As a reminder, giveaways are always open 1 week after the episode airs. We always air on Mondays, so make sure to tune into us live. And I know you're also, your art, it's like you have to see it in order to really get it. Yeah. And I don't know if you would, how would you describe your art in a few words? You probably can't describe your art in a few words, but this
Well,
series...
you know, I describe it the way other people do, especially those yeah. close to me that don't sometimes appreciate it. It's funny listening to the words of people that don't get it say it, and they'll say it's like dark horror comedy or something like that, you know. And it's funny because I've yeah. never considered it dark horror comedy. I always think it's just, I paint until I start thinking it's funny, and when I think it's funny, I'm like, boom, I got something, and I roll and I make myself laugh. But there is a quality to it that I understand what they're saying, where I go, yeah, it's pretty dark and it's sometimes spooky, and these are the keywords. But you know, I'm not going to go pigeonhole myself with like Marilyn Manson or something like that. Cause I don't really feel it that it's that realm, but who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Unconventional Lifers, we'll put some of those images up on the website, and you can also check out Daniel Matthew York at Daniel Matthew York on Instagram. And for those that want to follow along, stay in touch. I know I just mentioned Instagram, but what's the best place for people to do all that?
Yeah, Instagram is great. You can also go to my website. I update stuff on my website, which is just danielmatthewyork.com, just the same as my Instagram, Daniel Matthew York. That's two T's in the Matthew.
Yeah, we'll put all those links, Unconventional Lifers, at the show notes. Go check that out, unconventionallifeshow.com. Daniel, so good to chat with you. Thanks for keeping it light and fun, and so much wisdom that you've had to say. So it's great having you on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, everyone.